And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're an island of tranquility in the Sea of Glenn Beck here on KKZZ Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Our theme today is the home front. My first guest is an expert on kitchen design. We learned what changes the kitchen are most important. Now, my next guest will tell you to say goodbye to your power company. See you, Southern California Edison. He is going to tell us how he's lived off the power grid for more than 14 years and how he's thriving. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Cam Mather and his wife, Michelle, live independently off the electricity grid using the sun and the wind to power their home and their business. Cam publishes books and DVDs about renewable energy and sustainability. He is the author of Thriving During Changing Times, the Energy, Food, and Financial Independence Handbook. Cam is working towards the goal of making his home zero carbon, and with his extensive garden, he aims to be completely independent of outside inputs. He's been gardening organically for over 30 years, and he operates a market garden as well. Cam lives on 150 acres of forests and ponds in Canada. Welcome to the show, Cam. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome, and thank you for being on the show, being our guest today from the frozen north up there. So your topic really couldn't be timelier. You know, everybody needs to start thinking about renewable energy, reducing their carbon footprint, being more independent, and so forth. The problem is that it seems pretty hard for the average person to do that. You know, those people that are willing to endure the hardships of making the change to be a little bit more independent are the crunchy granola types and the ex-hippies and that sort of thing. So how do you get started living the more independent lifestyle?
Well, I would suggest that you try and get the best return on investment for your when you start looking at renewable energy, and the best way to do that is actually with energy efficiency. And that means you go through and you make your house as energy efficient as you can before you start generating your own energy or electricity. And you know, you're going to start with your switching your incandescent light bulbs to compact fluorescents, and making sure your home is airtight as you can to try and keep the energy in that you're using to heat or cool it. And the best return on investment from an appliance standpoint, after you've replaced fridges and televisions with the energy efficient ones, is to look at something called a solar domestic hot water heater. And it's not as sexy as putting a solar panel on your roof for electricity, but you'll actually get a very good return on investment from it. It's going to pay itself back probably in 4 or 5 years. So that unit is going to circulate a liquid through it, and you're going to use that to heat all your domestic hot water that you would use for bathing and washing dishes, washing clothes, etc.
Now, so, Cam, this is not one of those instant hot water type of devices that they're selling now. This is completely different. So what is a solar domestic water hot water heater?
Well, it's going to be a flat panel or vacuum tubes that you'll put on your roof. The sun will hit it. You will circulate a liquid through it. It's often an antifreeze or ethanol, and you will bring that heat back from your roof, and you'll have a heat exchanger that will exchange that with the hot water tank in your home. Some people will use it in conjunction with an on-demand hot water heater, which just means that you'll be using your tank as a storage area for all the hot water that the sun's created. And then if you had a period of several days of cloud, once that tank was depleted, then your on-demand hot water heater would come on. And on-demand are much more efficient than a regular tank, but if you're using it in conjunction with a system like a solar domestic hot water heater, probably 40 to 50, or in a place like where you are in Southern California, up to 70% of your hot water is going to come from the sun. So that means you no longer have to spend electricity or buy a natural gas to heat that hot water.
Wow, I mean, that's great. Now, how much does one of these solar domestic hot water heaters cost?
Depending on your house and the type you end up with, let's say $5,000 to $6,000.
Okay,
and that may be a bit high if you check out some of the incentives. Sometimes there will be state and federal incentives for these devices, depending on what's going on in your area. And if you're looking at an investment, say of $5,000, there's a good chance that will be paid for within 5 years. And the nice thing about that is that it's basically a 20% return on your investment. So, a lot of people right now, if they have some cash around, they're looking at, well, do I put it in the GIC? Do I just leave it in my bank earning interest? You're going to make, a percentage point or 2 or 3% maybe in a high-yielding bond. But something like this, an investment in something like this, is going to pay itself back much faster and give you a much higher return on investment.
All right. We're talking to Cam Mather, everybody, author of the book Thriving During Challenging Times. And, of course, we're talking about being more energy efficient. So what are some other tips for being more energy efficient before we take the plunge and start generating our own energy?
Well, you may want to look at things like, in a place that is challenged for water, something like toilets and how you use water, putting rain barrels on downspouts for watering gardens and things. Moving water around requires a lot of energy. So anytime you can use less of it, you're going to save yourself some money, and you're going to save yourself your municipality some work for having to process that water. So making your home more water efficient is really important. And, it's always tough to say because people are pretty used to air conditioning, but things like ceiling fans and anything that you can do that to reduce your demands on things like that. Because you got to remember, in a place like California, a lot of your electricity is coming from natural gas.
Right.
Natural gas, when it's sitting underground, isn't really doing anything to the atmosphere, but when you take it out of the ground and burn it, you are going to release that carbon dioxide. So all the energy you save is really significantly helping you reduce your carbon footprint on the planet as well.
Well, let me stop you there, Cam, and ask you about natural gas for producing energy. Natural gas is a cleaner form of energy than, say, coal, and probably more so than oil for generating energy as well. And there's a movement afoot to move more of our country towards natural gas, which we have an abundance of here in the United States. So doesn't it make more sense to, let me ask you about the energy efficiency of natural gas. You say that it is not as efficient as the others would lead us to believe?
Well, no, I think that because we're told so many times that natural gas is a cleaner burning fuel, which it is, most of us are more comfortable using it. But the reality is that really what you're taking is carbon that sequestered underground and bringing it out and burning it. And I know things seem very good right now in terms of natural gas in the U.S., but I think long-term what you're going to find is that a lot of the gas we're finding right now is shale gas or coal bed methane gas, where it's much harder to get at. It takes more energy to extract it. So I think what you're going to see is the fact that it's going to be harder to get to the natural gas that we have, and some of the natural gas that you're burning in California is coming in as liquid natural gas. So it's coming in via large tankers from other countries and being offloaded and burned that way. So yes, no question that natural gas is much cleaner than coal or oil, but there's still an impact to the planet using it. So anything you can do to burn less of it, I think really is not only helping your carbon footprint, but it's going to save you money in the long term.
All right. We're talking to Cam Mather, everybody. Cam, what are some other energy-efficient ideas that you have for us today?
Well, I think that it's something that I talk more about when I speak to people in northern climates, but geothermal heating systems are very popular around, in northern states, simply because you are able to put the pipes through the ground and extract the heat from the ground that's in there. But the nice thing is they work in reverse in the summer. So in your case, where probably more of your loads for that would actually be cooling, you could actually reduce your amount of electricity you're purchasing for a central air conditioner by installing a geothermal system. And again, systems like that tend to have subsidies available from the federal and state government. So there's a great website called the Database for State and State. It's called DSIRE.org. And that database will actually give you a series of subsidies or incentives for you to make a lot of these changes.
That website again is DSIRE.org. If you're interested and you're listening to us at work, you can look that up on your computer right now. Well, Cam, now that leads us into a path that I wanted to explore with you a little bit, so let's jump right into that. You mentioned geothermal. Most people, at least in California, don't think geothermal. We think solar. We think wind, of course. Geothermal is a very, very viable alternative fuel as well. But for the most part, solar, wind, and geothermal have all proved to be pretty uneconomical to pursue. What's it going to take to make alternate energy affordable and practical for many Americans to use?
Well, I think what's happening right now is that the technologies are changing gradually, but what happened with the economic crisis in the last couple of years is the fact that prior to that, you had a number of companies countries like Germany and Japan and California that had strong incentives, so you had a huge sort of ramp up in production of things like photovoltaic panels. And with the economic downturn, you had a much, much excess capacity in the marketplace. So I think the price of solar panels in particular has come down significantly. So I think right now it makes a lot of sense to start looking at investing in these things. It's something where there's marginal increases in technology that will always continue. But right now, I think is a great time to do it. And I think if you talk to any dealer that sells this equipment, I think that they would agree that, you know, in the last 18 months, there's been a fairly good price drop. So now's a good time to get in and do it. I think that when I compare what I started paying solar panels for 14 years ago with what you're paying now, it's quite significant.
Well,
in a great climate like yours, it makes sense to start looking at these things.
And it's very interesting that you mentioned that. A couple points to make on that. First of all, we do have a solar panel manufacturer up in Carpinteria, the northern end of our listening area here, that manufactures them. And who's the number one consumer of those solar panels? It's not California. It's Germany. That's where they're sending most of those solar panels to. The other thing is you mentioned about investing in solar. And you know, it's interesting that you should bring that up because solar stocks today on the New York Stock Exchange are, in fact, up. But if you look at that trend over the last 12 months, it's been actually a dismal investment. Those solar manufacturing companies have taken a real beating over the last 12 months. So perhaps in the long run, you might be right about investing, but I think over the last 12 months, it has not been the best alternative investment that somebody could come up with. That being said, we think about energy independence, but you also explore in your lifestyle not only energy independence, but also water independence and food independence. Water is really big for us here in California. As you can imagine, we import most of our water from Colorado. So talk to us a little bit more about water independence. What are you doing to be independent of your municipal water company?
Well, I live in a rural environment, so I have a well that's drilled, and I also, near my garden, have a dug well. And using water in my home is one of the biggest uses of electricity I have, so I like to use it as efficiently as I can. So it means that I have a very energy-efficient pump that pumps it into my house, then I have a low-flush toilet. We have aerators on our faucets that reduce how much water comes out, low-flow shower heads that, again, allow you to have lots of water. The feeling that lots of water is coming out of your tap when you're using less of it. And then rain barrels on all our downspouts. We have a house and a guest house where my office is, so we have about 10 rain barrels that fill up anytime there's a good rainstorm. And then we also have a dug well over close to the garden that by the end of the summer gets very low. But to get the water out of that well, again, I'm using a solar panel and a little DC pump. So I find that I live with a very sandy soil in an area that's very prone to drought. And so I use water very efficiently, and when I get it to where I want it in the garden, I make sure that I use a drip irrigation system that puts the water right to where I need it, and sometimes I will mulch some of my crops like garlic to maintain the moisture in the soil so it doesn't evaporate so quickly in the heat.
I see. We're talking to Cam Mather, everybody, author of the book Thriving During Challenging Times. And Cam, you brought up an interesting point in that answer that I wanted to explore as well, and that is you live in a rural area. But in reality, 2010 was the first time that over half of the world's population now lives in a city, in an urban area. Are the ideas that you're teaching, are they applicable to urban environments as well as living in the frozen north as you do?
No question about it, and I think that one of the things that I think even utilities are looking at now is that many are trying to move their electricity distribution from a centralized system with large power points to power plants to a more distributed system where you have a lot of smaller people pumping into the grid. So I think what you'll find is that from an urban standpoint, companies that make electricity are going to offer more and more incentives to do that. In a great climate like you have for sun, I think when I'm talking about investment in solar equipment, I'm talking about the actual you putting money to put solar panels on your roof.
Gotcha.
Because I think what you found in Southern California, when you had the Enron challenge down there and you had rolling blackouts and all those other things, is the fact that most people discovered that electricity is pretty important to them, and that it can be it can be held hostage, or certainly it can increase in price fairly significantly. So by putting those solar panels on your roof, in other words, what you're doing is you're sort of isolating yourself from another one of those incidents where, electricity either becomes less dependable or it goes up in price very quickly. And by doing this, you're sort of inflation-proofing yourself from those energy shocks. And you're also going to make sure that if there are blackouts or brownouts or, there's a problem with the power, and all those things that we're so used to continue to stay on. Because, you know, the reality is the technology is here today, but most people, or a lot of people, when they look at how they're going to spend their money is, you know, if I've got $10,000 to spend, I may be more inclined to want to put in a granite countertop than, say, $10,000 worth of solar panels. And I think what I'm suggesting to people now is that I think in a future where energy may become more expensive and less dependable, that the investment that you make in those solar panels on your roof is going to really improve the quality of your life and inflation-proof yourself, reduce your carbon footprint, give you a much better feeling of the independence that so many of us used to have before we started earning incomes and giving our money to somebody else to provide all the essentials for us, like food and water and heat, all like those sorts of things where now somebody else does that for us. I think you'll find that by making this stuff yourself, you get it's a very comforting feeling to know that, you know, if there is a power outage or the next time a big storm blows in off the ocean, that your lights are going to stay on because you've got that capability right at your house.
We're talking to Cam Mather, everybody. And Cam, what you say makes sense. People listening to the sound of your voice may be intrigued by what you have to say. Where would you direct them to go to get more information?
Well, my book, Thriving During Challenging Times, The Energy, Food, and Financial Independence Handbook, is a look at all areas of your life. And we also published a book more specifically about renewable energy called The Renewable Energy Handbook. And that's by author William Kemp. You can get any of those books at bookstores or Amazon or at our website, which is aztext.com, aztext.com.
aztext.com. And, of course, you can always buy that book at Bank of Books, our local independent bookstore here in Ventura as well. Cam, you are a wealth of information. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
Take care and have a good holiday.